Do you know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help right now. Insurance may cover everything. Stop the drug and alcohol nightmare. Are drug and alcohol problems hitting you too close to home? Get help right now. Insurance may cover everything.
800-210-7907. 800-210-7907. 800-210-7907. That's 800-210-7907.
Are you ready to become a better version of yourself? To become a leader in your personal and professional life? Then welcome to the CJ Evolution Podcast, where we put a twist on traditional criminal justice professions and provide you with the tools you need to set yourself up for success in your career and for the future. Now, welcome your host, the CJ Evolutionist himself, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
You know who I love talking to a lot? Our former first responders that have gotten out of the first responder field, whatever they were doing, wherever they were at, and they go on to kick ass in entrepreneurship and in business. You know why I love talking to them? Because a lot of former first responders are not that way. That's not a dig on the first responder field, but I know because I've been there, and a lot of cops and other first responders think they can't do anything else once they leave their profession. That's a bunch of BS. You can do whatever you want. My next guest, Dave Seymour, is testament to that. He has kicked ass in the real estate profession and investing for many years now. And you know what? He was a former first responder, but he had a vision and he went for it. This interview is amazing. I love talking to Dave Seymour. I could talk to him all day. You are going to love this interview with the one and only Dave Seymour on the CJ Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Super pumped to be here. Patrick here. We know you got many options, but thank you for spending a little bit of your valuable time with us. That's why we continue to grow, you sharing it with your family and friends. If you take a moment, go over to Apple Podcasts, give us that 5-star rating. We sure would appreciate it. Big shout out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field, the first responder field, whatever you were doing, wherever you were at. Thank you for doing it. No doubt. Very, very difficult times. That's an understatement, but you are strong. You are resilient. You go out every day. You put it on the line. You come back to your kids and you do it the next day. Don't believe all the crap that you hear in some media outlets and by some talking heads. It's just crap. Remember, you are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. We're going to come out of this stronger and more resilient. Stay the course. Folks, if you love coffee, you know what I'm about to tell you. You are going to love the products from Four Sigmatic. Again, I'm a huge fan of this company, have been for a couple years now, and I love the Lion's Mane mushroom coffee. Yes, I said mushrooms. It doesn't taste like mushrooms. It tastes better than regular coffee, and it's better for you. It gives me that clarity, that zip, that focus that I need throughout the day. Head over to cjevolution.com. You're going to see the link to Four Sigmatic, and best of all, you're going to get 15% off your purchases using the promo code CJEVO. Enjoy. If you are the person in charge of managing and overseeing your extra duty program and in your agency, I know how overwhelming that can be, especially with other projects and assignments you got going on. That's where Extra Duty Solutions can help. Now, Extra Duty Solutions helps law enforcement agencies add efficiency and effectiveness to their extra duty programs while allowing them to focus on what really matters. That's the safety of their citizens. They work with law enforcement agencies to administer their extra duty programs in areas like client interaction, scheduling, invoicing, collections, officer payments, and much more. Their services are provided at no cost to the department and minimal cost to the clients, and their programs can be customized to meet the needs of any agency. Head over to extradutysolutions.com. That's extradutysolutions.com, and tell them Patrick from CJ Evolution sent you. On to the great show with the one and only David Seymour. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I'm very excited to have my next guest on the show. His name is Dave Seymour. Now, after 16 years As a firefighter and paramedic, he launched his career, rapidly becoming one of the nation's top real estate investors. Within his first few years, Dave had transacted millions of dollars of real estate and has become one of the nation's leading experts in both residential and commercial transactions. David, are you there, brother?
I'm here. Who is that guy you're talking about? He sounds awesome. I can't wait to hear him. I can share some stuff.
Well, I could just keep going with your
yeah, that thing's way too long.
You were on the series Flipping Boston, which posted the highest ratings ever for A&E Network at the time of airing.
Now, first of all, on a Saturday morning,
first of all, thank you for your service as a first responder and paramedic. Very tough job, understatement. Now, I always ask, you know, first responders that come on the show, brother, I mean, what got you in to the first responder field?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a great question. Look, we had some fun prior to jumping on the call here. Yeah. Got to share a little bit of history. I always enjoyed the teamwork, right? I enjoyed camaraderie. And I'm an immigrant to this country. I came over from England back in 1986. Shh, don't tell anybody. It's a secret. but I carried an American passport today, and I'm proud to carry one. And look, I bounced around for a while, brother. I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. I was a young guy. I was just turned 20 years old when I came to the States chasing my first wife. And one of my friends said to me, he said, you know what, dude? He said, why don't you get one of those good government jobs? You know, be a cop or a firefighter or a mailman, a teacher. I'm like, I don't want to deliver mail. I'm scared of dogs. I don't want to, you know, straight up, I don't want to be a teacher. I'd like to kill kids. That's not true. Only my own. But, you know, police work always attracted me. So I was in my mid-20s, I think it was, and I was taking a ton of tests, man. Mm-hmm. I took a bunch of police officer tests. I took a bunch of firefighter tests. And it was funny, the day that I got accepted to Lynn Fire Department. Lynn is just north of Boston, Massachusetts. We serve about 225,000 communities. So it's a pretty serious city. Yeah. You know, we got the idiots on the blue team and the red team. You know what I mean? The bad mamma jamma gang bangers. So, you know, it was a pretty serious position to be in. But it's funny, Pat. I remember the day I got accepted onto the fire department, I got a card from Miami PD. And they said, congratulations, you've been selected as a new candidate for Miami Police Department.
Got to make a choice.
You got to make a choice. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. I felt like Don Johnson every day of my life anyway, but what the fuck? Yeah, so that's how I ended up in a fire service. And I got to tell you, brother, I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. I absolutely loved the fire service. I didn't like the bullshit or the politics.
No.
But the job, the guys, the adrenaline rush, the service, you know, you can really go to work and do some pretty miraculous things. And you know what's here's funny, right? You got me going on a tangent already. I know what a real emergency looks like, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. I know what it looks like. I've seen them die right in front of me, and I've seen them be born right in front of me. So when you've seen that, participated in that, got through it, when you come into the world of business, forget about it. What do you mean we got a problem? We don't have a problem.
Yeah,
there's a solution for every problem.
Yeah, you've been through everything. You've
yeah. So that's how I ended up on it. Yeah. Cool. Loved it, brother. Loved it.
Did 16 honorable years, like I said before. Now let's pivot a little bit. So, what, you know, you did the fire gig for a long time. Mm-hmm. What made you get into real estate? Because that's totally opposite. I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, I know firefighters, you know, they go be consultants, they go work for, you know, insurance companies and stuff like that.
Yeah. Look, let's go full honesty, 0 degrees, as we call it. I grew up in a working class household. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that. But where I came from, I always say today I'm a blue collar guy in a white collar world. So watch out, right? I bring a little tood with it. But, you know, my father, best advice to me as a young man was, you know, go do 8 hours work for somebody else. Shut your mouth, keep your head down, do the right thing. And if you're lucky after 40, 45 years, you might have enough money to, you know, retire and have a gold watch and, you know, die when you're 70. And it was like, that was the plan that was laid out. And I didn't know anything about money. I was a firefighter.
Yeah.
You know, we earned a decent salary. You know, you're not going to be rich being a firefighter. So then, you know, you get your second job. I work construction, a small company with a couple of guys. Then I needed a third job, nights and weekends, retail security, pot roast police. And I was working 120 hours a week.
I couldn't
make ends meet because I was a financial donkey.
Yeah.
I was a financial illiterate. I found out in a great country called America, you can spend more money than you earn, which is a very, very bizarre concept to my father back in England. And it was like, I was ignorant. I was dumb. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know how to manage money, work money. And I was losing my house, Pat. It was 2000 and late six, early seven. My house was in pre-foreclosure. I had $70,000 in unsecured debt. And my second marriage had ended. I was dating my now wife, Mary Beth. And, I'm also sober. I've been sober over 30 years. So when those painful times in my life showed up, I couldn't even go medicate myself, tie one on and forget about it. And I just had to face some honesty, and I had to look at what I owned and what I didn't. What was I responsible for, and what I wasn't? And I learned that day from a friend of mine. He said, "It's time to put on the long pants and take off the short pants. Stop whining. Stop crying. Stop blaming the rest of the world. Fess up and be a man." And I'm like, "What are you talking about? I'm a firefighter." He said, "No, take responsibility." So I start praying a little bit and screaming and shouting at my God. And next thing you know, I'm find my ass sitting in a real estate seminar. Straight up. I was the seminar guy. I went to a free event, went to a second event, spent $27,000 of Mary Beth's money on credit cards that she couldn't afford for my education.
Yeah.
And that day I purchased accountability. That's what I did. I can't talk shit anymore because now I got $27,000 with accountability and a beautiful wife behind me who says, "You better do this."
Yeah.
So I went at it with vengeance, brother. And it was funny, man. I look at my real estate career, and I remember I just had this conversation last night with some investors. And it was like, I came through a class of maybe, I'll say 200, 250 people. And out of that class, I think maybe 50 people signed up and got educated. And then 3 months later, I'm like calling and texting the guys and the girls who were in my class, and they've fallen off. They're not doing it. And I'm like, is it me or is it them? And I found out that it takes some commitment. It takes some courage to change that dramatically. I'd love to tell you I woke up one day and said, I've done my time in the fire service. I think I'm going to be a fantastic entrepreneurial real estate investor today. I'd be lying to you. I'd be lying. I was beaten into submission. Real estate made sense to me because of my construction. I'd done some sticks and bricks, and I just stayed the course with it. And I started to focus on value. What value can I bring to the marketplace that people will be attracted to me? Because money's nothing. Money isn't. It doesn't matter today.
Yeah.
Money is a devaluing commodity every single day that we breathe on this planet. And after the trillions of dollars these guys have put into the economy, it's devaluing even faster.
Mm-hmm.
So what's more valuable is skill set, education, implementation. And I just went for it, Patrick. I went for it like a mother. I went for it full force, and took no prisoners and just went. I was full on. So, massive action, massive results, massive passion. It was that kind of philosophy.
And we talked a little bit, David, and that's amazing.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit before we started about, failure. I mean, there's a ton of entrepreneurs out there and a ton of people who are successful like you. But I think the difference between you and a lot of people, the masses, I would venture to guess, is you, I'm willing to bet you had failures along the way.
Of course.
Everybody does. I mean, that's what gets me. People have this misnomer that, Bill Gates woke up one day and he was just fucking a billionaire and he never had any failures. Fail your way to success. But
correct.
And I know the most people, they fail that first time and they say, screw it, I'm done, man. I can't do that.
Watch this, brother. It's not their fault. God bless them.
Yeah.
It's not their fault. I learned a long time ago that I can only control what I can control, right? And what I mean by that is this, is like, I sense this from the minute we were talking prior to recording. As soon as I connected with you, I know that you're my people. It took less than 30 seconds to identify that. That's a line of communication between people like us who understand it. And here's the challenge, my brother. And listen to me, I get elevated with this. Unfortunately, it's a lot easier to be a miserable son of a bitch and complain all the time than it is to look in the mirror and take responsibility.
Of course.
People are fucking lazy. And that laziness manifests through generation after generation after generation. Living in a society that's got their hand out instead of looking for an opportunity for a hand up. And that is it's the cancer, brother. Yeah. It's the cancer. So don't ever tell me, whoever you are, I was lucky. Because the definition of luck is where opportunity meets preparedness. Mm-hmm. There is a massive, unprecedented opportunity in our lives every single day right now. And it came in the form of a pandemic. And some people are hiding under their desks, wetting their pants, and living in fear. Then there's other people who are pivoting through the chaos and creating opportunity. That's a freaking decision, brother. Mm-hmm. That's a decision. I can't control the person sitting under the table. God bless them. We need ditch diggers in life as well. And I don't mean that from a moral high ground. Mm-hmm. I swear to God, I don't. I'm a feet on the street kind of guy. I don't have a fucking Harvard degree. But I do have a degree of the street, and I know what works and what doesn't. And when I fail forward, not fucking back.
Yeah.
And I think that message, for some reason, has been diluted and washed away. And it pains me. It pains me to know that there isn't a forward motion in society today to go out and create things, right? Society wants to go out and destroy shit right now, and that I don't know, man. I don't want to get on a political.
It gets me
riled up. It does.
Well, I don't know why we, you know, I think you and I probably, even though we just met, we probably think a lot alike, and I think it starts with the educational system. I think it's a fucking disaster. We're not teaching kids. Yeah. We're teaching them how to be a cog in a wheel instead of. I always wondered why aren't we teaching kids, you know, finance, entrepreneurship, how to go out there and make something of your life. And I'm not knocking people that get jobs. I'm just saying that why aren't we teaching people to go out there and be entrepreneurs or have the option instead of just a cog in a wheel? Because what happens when you lose your friggin' job? I learned a long time ago that you need to be versatile. You need to have options. Okay, if A fails, I'm going to go to B. If B doesn't work, I'm going to go to C. And that's just what I learned a long time. But I think we live in a society now, again, not everybody, that people are just, well, I'm entitled. You know, I'm just, you give me my shit and I don't have to go out there and work. And I really do think too, brother, and you, I don't know if you agree with this. I imagine you probably do. It's who you surround yourself with.
Of course.
I would imagine that you didn't have people in your bubble, in your sphere of influence when you were starting out saying, you know what, Dave, you're going to fucking fail. You suck. Right. You're never going to make it. I imagine it was probably the opposite, right?
I went seeking the people that I wanted to be like.
Exactly.
And that's an entrepreneurial gem of a secret right there. Surround yourself with people you want to be like. And if you look to the left of you, and I did this in a firehouse, and don't get me wrong, I loved the job. I told you that. But here's what I didn't love. I didn't love looking to the guy on the left of me in a recliner and the guy on the right of me in a recliner. And both of them guys complaining about the job and the environment that they were in while we were watching fucking TV on a night shift. Because I had dug a ditch, right? I had worked my ass off since I was 14 years old. And that entitlement mentality, you know, is such a drag. One of my first captains, Patrick, he says to me, we were in our little in-house academy. There was like 30 of us that got on together. And he says to me, guys, in your career, you're going to find two kinds of firefighters. He said, you're going to find drains and you're going to find radiators. You're going to find guys who want to be firefighters and guys who want to work for the fire department. He said, you choose which kind of firefighter you want to be. And that analogy just rolls into everything, right? It's the eagles and the turkey scenario, right?
Yeah,
they say,
exactly.
Soar with the eagles and you're hanging out with the turkeys, right? So I again, it's a choice. And the other thing is this, right? Yeah, but I don't know where the millionaires are. Stop it. I didn't tell you to go find millionaires and hang out with them. Because if you're fucking whining in the first place, they're not going to want to hang out with you.
Exactly.
Your first responsibility is to write a list of the 10 things that are valuable and special about you. We can always look in the mirror and find 20 things about us we don't like. Start practicing looking in the mirror and finding things about yourself that you do like. And if you can't find anything, whose fucking problem is that?
Exactly. It's yours.
Right? Now I've got a list of attributes. Not my next challenge is to then look at those attributes. I don't care if it's two. Start with one or two. Just start. And now you look at them, you say, how can I turn those attributes into something valuable for somebody I want to be around or be like?
Mm-hmm.
An entrepreneur in real estate, somebody who's great with an online business, somebody who's great speaking and presenting, somebody who's a kick-ass salesman or woman, right? What attributes do you have as a human being? And if you can identify those and really stay the course with that, magic happens. I tell you, it's just a fact.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, you know, the larger percentage don't think that way. You know, they don't think that way. So I've always looked, here's something you're going to love this one. And I know you know it. If you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Exactly.
I know that.
I don't want to be the smartest fucking guy in the room. I want to surround myself with the smartest people.
I'm the CEO of a company that's raising $100 million to invest in multifamily assets in the Gulf Coast region of Florida. Man, that makes me sound fucking smart. No, I'm surrounded with all the people who know how to implement that.
Exactly.
I'm just the figurehead. I just drive the boat. You know what I'm saying? So I get it.
A lot of people, they just want to be that way. And I'm not saying, you know, if you're smart, that's great. I'm just saying that you're missing the point if you always got to be that guy or girl in the room that thinks they're the smartest in the room for that very reason. Right. You're not learning.
Right.
You're not learning.
Let me know if you know these ones. We call them dig jams. You know what a dig jam is, right? Damn, I'm good, just ask me. That's the guy or girl, right, who comes up to you as the expert, right, or the alpha in whatever, you know, arena you're in. They come up, they ask you a question, and then they start answering their own question before you can even answer.
Exactly.
It, right?
Exactly.
And the dig jam can sit right there with the entitled ding dong donkey who thinks, you know, the world's going to just pick them up and carry them along. These are all unproductive people. And one of the best skills that you fine tune and dial in as an entrepreneur is being able to read people very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Because, hold on, the guys are going out on a call. No. every time I hear a truck go by, I always say, go get them, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you can dial in reading people in a very short period of time, it saves us as entrepreneurs the most valuable commodity we have, which is time. If I find somebody who's wasting my time, I get visually annoyed. You know what I mean? I do. It's precious to me. So being able to identify a dig jam, identify the entitled person, identify the, you know, the whiner, the complainer, the cancerous one, you know who they are. If you can identify those people, you know, my inner circle is very small, and it's small for a reason.
Yeah.
It's small for a reason. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I look, if somebody listens to this, you know, you could quite easily go, listen to those entitled assholes. No.
No.
No, we earned it. We went out and worked. We sacrificed. We changed. I've had, you know, $10 in the bank account and prayed for another 10 to show up, and I didn't know where it was coming from.
Yeah.
Like, I've fucking been there. You know what I mean? So it's not a gift. You earn this.
Yeah.
You earn it. And then the gifts come afterwards. And then the beautiful thing is you now got something of value to pass on to somebody else. And that's when I get excited today. You know?
Well, before we get into, I want to talk to you, ask some questions to you about real estate, but just kind of getting back for people who are listening to this, I mean, Dave could go on and on and give you just golden nuggets about being an entrepreneur. Yeah. But one of the things I always learned young ago, Dave, and you probably know this, is for the people out there that want to start reaching out to people and getting some advice or mentorship or something like that, that's fine, but you have to bring value to them. You hit it right there. Your time is valuable. I get people reaching out to me all the time saying, can you do this for me? Do that for me? Right. It's not about that. You have to provide value to that person. And I know it might sound like, well, he's being a dick. No, my time is valuable. I don't mind helping you, But you have to bring value to that relationship. Am I wrong?
Sure. No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And it's also a two-way street.
Exactly.
We have a responsibility to sometimes get our own heads out of our rear ends because there's value all around us and sometimes we don't recognize it.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
It's a two-way street. I'll give you a perfect example. I was teaching in a large seminar environment, and there was a younger guy on his own in my class. There was maybe 100 people in this classroom, and for some reason he was grabbing my attention, and I don't know what it was, but there was something about this young guy that interested me. I was attracted to him. I was attracted to an energy, like when he shared in a group environment. Mm-hmm. I liked what came out of this guy's mouth. Long story short, he was 24 years old when I met him. He's now 25. And he doesn't have that alpha personality to be out front like I do. But what this guy did was he was writing the computer code at his job at Fidelity so that Fidelity could predict the market cycles, right? That's what this kid did. He's off the chart smart. And he invested tens of thousands of dollars in this real estate education program, not because he wanted necessarily to learn the mechanics of real estate investing. He wanted my cell phone number. He told me that later. And I thought to myself, that interaction happened for a reason. So now a year and maybe 6 months later, he's a fully vested fund manager. He's a 33% partner in my business with me because that kid brings unbelievable value to my business.
Exactly.
He does things with a computer that makes the computer purr. He creates operational systems. I swear to God, Patrick.
No, I believe it.
Watch this. Show me a spreadsheet. I don't know about you. I look at a spreadsheet. I fall asleep. All I do is look at the bottom right-hand corner, which is my payday, and I go, that's a kick-ass fucking spreadsheet, brother. Make me another one that looks like that. But this, you know, like I'm consistently being managed by this guy because I am an operational idiot. So I need somebody like that to manage me, to make sure that everything I do is timed to proficiency and flows accurately. I'm dealing with hundreds of millions of dollars of other people's money. You can't afford to fuck that up. So, you know, my point of that was simply this, is that I have a responsibility to have my radar up to look for those opportunities. And when I wasn't in the position I was in today, I had a responsibility to know what my core values were, my core competencies, elevate those, and then push those out into the marketplace and see who picks up on them. And if they don't pick up on them in 1 week, tough shit, right? 6 months, oh dear. 1 year, what a shame. 3 years, keep going. 5 years, ooh, what's that?
Yeah.
There's a relationship that works, and then magic happens. So, you know, it's definitely a process. It's not an event, right? I think a lot of people think that entrepreneurship and wealth creation is an event. I choose today to be an entrepreneur. Okay. No, it doesn't work that way. I choose every day to be an entrepreneur and get in the grind and go to work and do it bootstrap, do it with money, without money, with people, on my own. But, you know, it's definitely finding the right people to play the game with. It's been the absolute key piece for me.
And it's not a sprint. Like you said, it's a marathon.
It's a marathon. It is. And you better be in shape because that's a long run. I've done one. Just one.
I love it.
Now I ran the Boston Marathon, brother, one time.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, for real. Shit, I ran after 9/11.
That would kill me. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I ran after 9/11, me and four other guys. We ran with 343 Never Forget on our shirts.
That is awesome.
Probably one of the most incredible days of my life. Like,
now, how long is that? Forgive my ignorance. How long is that?
Yeah, it's 26.2 miles.
No, I could do that right now.
Yeah, of course you can. I can. I went down to like 180 pounds. I looked like freaking like a skeleton. And, you know, it's brutal on your body. I'm a Clydesdale. I'm not supposed to run that far. Only unless the cops are chasing me. You know what I mean? But that was an amazing day.
Well, and it just pumps you up, man. It's such an accomplishment once you do something like that.
Fun. It was fun. So, I couldn't do it now. I'd die.
Let's talk a little bit about real estate, if you don't mind. So You know, I love, and I agree with you. There's so much opportunity out there. So is buying a home right now, and I guess it depends on where you're at right now. I'm just talking in general. Buying a home a good investment?
Yeah, it depends what you're going to do with it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if you buy a home to live in it, don't tell me it's your number one investment, because it's not. The definition of an investment means capital goes in and comes back with more money. That's an investment. Primary residence is not an investment. Somebody's making money on your home, and that's the bank. It's not us. Yeah, but I got equity. Well, that's dead money. That's money that's sitting still doing nothing. So don't tell me that's an investment either, unless you're smart enough to know how to get equity out of your primary residence and put it to work at a greater rate of return than what the bank is charging you for an interest on a home equity line of credit. But that's another class we'll talk about later. So look, primary residence, you know, it's your home. It's king of the castle, that kind of stuff. Right now, the market is at its absolute height. Probably the worst time to buy a piece of real estate right now, in my opinion. I just liquidated over 60 doors of a portfolio that I had up in Sanford, Maine. And the reason I did that is it doubled in value in 4 years. But it doesn't get any better than that. Sell it, get the capital, get cash strong, get ready for the next ride. So it's crazy what's going on. COVID is going to brutalize the single family market. And for some reason, the majority of the people out there haven't paid attention. We have what's called a forbearance going on right now, where the banks have been directed to put a moratorium or a hold, if you will, on mortgage payments. And people are like, hey, I don't have to pay my mortgage. No, stupid. You do have to pay your mortgage. You're going to have to pay all of it in about 6 or 8 months when they lift everything.
Exactly.
Are you ready to stroke a check for $20,000 for what's owed in back mortgage payments?
But people don't think that way. They don't think that way.
Why?
They think about it, okay, what am I getting right now instead of down the road?
Short-sighted instead of long-sighted. You got it, Pat. Yeah, that's it. So look, when that turns the corner, it's going to obviously have a huge impact. I can't remember the exact statistics, but it doesn't matter anymore. You can just make them up, apparently, so I'm happy. But some of the statistics are, I think there's something like 4 million mortgages right now in this country that are in forbearance. I don't know what that represents in money or inventory, but, you know, it's enough. I had a fight, actually, with a realtor. He goes, that's not a problem. There's only 3% are in forbearance in Massachusetts. And I'm like, okay, micro, macro, you might be right, but guess what? In Massachusetts, the average mortgage payment is around $2,800 a month. So, you know, what does that look like, right? When 3% of that all becomes, you know, has to come to fruition. And then also on the investment side, I mean, tenants don't have to pay their rent.
Yeah.
I don't want to see anybody lose a home. I don't want to see anybody out on the street. But you can't change the rules of the game like that and not expect massive, massive consequences. Landlords in Massachusetts right now are suing Charlie Baker and the governor of Massachusetts. They're suing him. Who the hell do you think you are telling me I can't collect rent from my tenants and I can't evict them? Are you all right? Where do we live? We're in America. We're still in America. Even with a fucking pandemic, we're still in America. There are certain rules and regulations that do not change. I am not a slum landlord. I am not out to hurt anybody. I'm not out to put kids on the street. That is not my business model. My business model is to allow me to negotiate with tenants to find the very best resolution I can. That's what I should be allowed to do, because the bank is still looking for me to pay my mortgage on the property.
There's a domino.
Why can't I collect my rents?
Yes.
So, you know, it's a crazy time. It's a crazy time with real estate. And I can't believe it. They're out there getting the HELOCs and they're fixing up their kitchens and they're putting in a new bathroom because they watched an HGTV episode and that paintwork looks so fucking good, honey. Put that on your honey-do list. Honey-do this and honey-do that. It's herds, man. It's herd mentality. And, I do it in a humorous way because otherwise it's pretty enraging and painful, because I want to find who's responsible for that. Yeah. And then it goes back to that point before, what I have control over and what I don't. I don't know who's responsible, but I know that for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And that reaction, think of the action of COVID Well, the equal and opposite reaction to that, what is it?
Yeah.
Printing money, devaluing the economy, housing, GDP's up the shit shoot, right? The gross domestic production is down like 30%.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to happen. And if you're living paycheck to paycheck, you're going to be the first one to get hurt by this process. What? And it's not all doom and gloom, but
yeah,
it sure is a pretty serious scenario, you know?
Well, and we live in such a great time as far as information, Dave, at least in my opinion. I mean, go educate yourself. I mean, yeah, you got to vet the information and stuff like that. But you said herd mentality. It's like the lemmings. I mean, people just follow the next, well, my neighbor's doing it, so I guess I'll do it. It's just like educate yourself. There's no reason why. And there's so much information out there. You got people like you out there educating people. There's no reason why you have to have this herd mentality.
There
it's a choice, like you said.
There is. And here's the reasons why.
Jeez.
Those that seek shall find.
Exactly.
Those that don't, guess what? Ain't gonna find anything because you ain't looking for it, right? What is the biggest motivator for a human being to change their circumstance? It's pain.
Yeah.
It's pain. And if we are not allowed to feel the pain because of forbearance, rent evictions, you know, nobody, this shit with kids, everyone's a winner. No, you're not. Not everyone's a fucking winner. You suck today. You didn't hit the ball. It wasn't a good game. Work harder. Get better. It's going to be okay. I love you no matter what. I always love you. Pass or fail. I love you, but fucking work for it. You know what I mean? So it's like people aren't looking for the information. And then there's the other class of people who are so busy, they don't do their due diligence on the information. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like they're so engrossed, if you will, in their own skill sets. I'm talking about the higher earners that I deal with in the investment world, like the doctors and the lawyers and that kind of thing. Like they don't understand tax benefits of real estate, or they don't understand about self-directed retirement accounts and self-directed defined benefit accounts. Mm-hmm. And it amazes me. I had this conversation so many times recently. It's like I have to always be careful and not assume that everybody else knows what I know. And I've done a lot of searching and a lot of seeking to find the information that I've then put to work. Yeah. You're with me, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's
that's
so many.
It. They don't look for it.
Yeah, and a lot of it is political, I believe. But that's a different.
Of
that's
course,
a different topic.
Yeah, look, you and I. You know what I mean? I ain't running for fucking president. I don't know about you. So, you know, I can say whatever I want. You can find whatever argument you believe to be true, and you can find the information to reinforce it.
Exactly.
It's as simple as that. But look at the results. That's what somebody said to me. One of my mentors said it to me earlier on. He said, number one, pay attention. And number two, look at the results. I said, what do you mean the results? He said, well, the people that are, you know, expounding upon a certain philosophy or idea or technique. He said, do your due diligence and look at the results. And I thought to myself, you know what? You're right. 401ks. It's the number one retirement vehicle in the United States of America. It's the number one misunderstood retirement vehicle in the United States of America.
The amount of fees that are attached to.
Oh, my God.
It's ridiculous. People don't know that.
I was talking to a gentleman. He had a financial advisor. And this was when, you know, Apple and Google stock was in its incipient phases. Little firefighter term there, incipient. But when it was in its beginning phases, this guy was buying these class A stocks for his client, this guy that I was talking to. He'd buy them, hold them for a week, and then sell them. Then buy them again, hold them for a week, and sell them. Well, what he was doing was he was taking advantage of what's called the front load, back end load fees that a brokerage can charge inside a 401k.
Yeah, exactly.
In these, he's double dipping and he's charging him over. Now you and I know that if you buy Apple stock at the beginning, you let that puppy run.
Yes.
Let that stallion out of the barn.
Buy low, sell high.
In its way, right? let it do magical things as it meets its friend Google along the way, you know? But you know, it's a lack of intelligence. You look at the compounding costs of fees inside these types of accounts, and if you could do the math with them, and you look at the compounding costs, what that does to the compounding returns over the life of an investment, fee structure can typically eat up as much as 66% of what they would have earned without fees. Mm-hmm. 66%, Patrick. That blows my freaking mind.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the 52-year-old American who's looking at his or her, you know, solo retirement accounts, their 401k accounts, and they're like, I know it says I did 7.5% or 9%, and it says I only pay, you know, 0.25% fees. Why the fuck isn't there more money in there? They then say, right? Where did all the money go? Because that doesn't. Oh, I'm sure it's fine. All right, I'll be there in a minute, honey. I gotta go. Right? Their life is going along. So, you know, those are part of my crusades, I think, in education to bring people over to the joys of sticks and bricks, and what that can do for a retirement account in comparison to some of the other vehicles that are out there. I mean, a huge portion of what we raise in capital is retirement money, self-directed retirement accounts, because I've got targeted returns of 8 to 12% and targeted 20% plus over a 5 or 6 year hold of the capital while it's working inside my private equity fund.
Yeah.
Show me that, you know, show me those kinds of opportunities. And, you know, its exposure to risk is so much lower, right? The value of real estate never goes down to zero, but there are companies that have gone out of business and never walked the face of the earth again, right? So I've always enjoyed the solidity and the fact that it's tangible, if you will, with sticks and bricks.
Yeah.
Whether it's a little single family house or whether it's the apartment complexes that we take down in Florida, you know, it's always made more sense to me. It was never overcomplicated. So I, you know, education's, again, it's out there for those that want it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's out there for everybody who needs it, but you got to want it, right?
Well, I like what you said, Dave. I mean, you're right. You know, people are motivated by. I mean, you feel that pain. People are like, "Fuck, I got to change."
Yeah,
I got to change.
And for some people, it's too late.
Yeah.
Right. What if you listen to this show and you're in, say, you're my age and you're in your mid 50s, and I spoke to a guy a few months back, and he said, "I'm good. I got $3 million in my 401k," and he's in his 50s. And I went, "Really? Is that right?" I said, "Even without inflation, the math equation for maybe 10 grand a month to live on is $3.5 million in a regular bank account, and that's not including the price of food. So you're gonna be good. Oh, by the way, you're married, aren't you, Bob? Yeah. Well, your wife can't eat." She can't have anything. All right. It's just for you, Bob. And that's for a 20-year retirement. What happens if you live 20 years and one day, Bob? Well, I don't know. I didn't think of that. Oh, by the way, Bob, we've now got fantastic progress in medicine. You might live till you're 90. How does that make you feel, Bob? Right. Yeah. So people don't think about it. Like the deck is stacked in such a way that we've got progress in medicine to help us live longer, and yet we've got retirement systems that are dysfunctional, that will never meet the expected longevity of our lives.
Yeah.
And so creates what's called the sandwich generation. And the sandwich generation is the 52 to 55 year old American who now has to take care of their parents and their fucking kids. And that's one of the biggest growing populations, or demographic, if you want to give it a classification, in our society today. And that's what's squeezing down America. And they go, "I don't know what happened." No, you don't know what happened because you didn't ask any questions, right? It's like Hillary Clinton. What happened?
Don't you think, Dave, really quick, don't you think, well, it's probably not going to be really quick.
No, not with me.
I just think people are conditioned, at least when I was growing up, I wasn't conditioned to the point where I had friends, that people think that money, you can't talk about money. You know, money's evil. You know, I mean, you, if you know, what, you want to be rich? Why? I mean,
yeah.
Look, I think you owe it to yourself and owe it to society because you can give back more if you're rich. And now some people might disagree with that, but that's that. Look, it's law of attraction, man. I am a firm believer in this. If you believe money is scarce and you're never going to have enough, guess what? That's what the universe is going to give you. If you think there is an abundance of money out there, which I believe, and money is flowing to me, I know it sounds simplistic, but the shit works. I never, you know, took a long time for me to realize that. But you have to get rid, and you know this, but for the person listening, you have to have a different view of money. Change your mindset of money. Because I think so many people out there are in this scarcity mindset, money's fucking evil, and that is just wrong.
And then what they do is because money's evil, we're taught to work and save, right? Work and save. That's what we're taught to do. You work, you trade time for other people's money, and then the money that you get in, you save it. Well, a lot of people don't know how to save or grow capital, so they save it at less of a rate than inflation is. So they're not saving it, they're killing it. And yet the concept of letting one free so it can come back with two or three scares the absolute crap out of them. Mm-hmm. And I got to go there because you went there. Dude, I am a walking, talking testimonial to the secret and the power of the law of attraction.
Love it.
Changed love my life. I'm gonna tell you a quick story because I can and I'm on the microphone. I'm sitting in the firehouse. I got to separate from the guys around me, turkeys, eagles, right? That kind of concept. I'm not hanging out on the recliners anymore. And I'm watching The Secret, and there was one testimony on there that grabbed my attention, and it was Jack Canfield.
Oh, Canfield, yeah.
Yeah, Jack.
Chicken soup.
Chicken soup from the soul. And he got me. I liked it. I'd watch everything that he had online. I'd read everything that he had. And I'm sitting there one day in the firehouse, and I throw the intention out there. One day I'm gonna meet Jack Canfield, and I'm gonna thank him for the education that he put out there for me to take. 6 years later, I spent $20,000. I flew across the country. I did a one-day coaching with Jack Canfield in his house out in Santa Barbara, California. Wow. Right, and I walk now. I've got a TV show behind me. I'm recognized. I've been on stages with Tony Robbins and Pitbull and Damon John. And, you know, I'm now a big deal. Just fucking ask me, right? So I got some history behind me. And I walk into Jack Canfield's living room, and he says, "Dave, I don't usually do these, but my secretary said that you're somebody I should meet and spend some time with." He said, what can I do for you?" And I looked at him, Patrick, and I said, "Nothing, Jack. I have absolutely no agenda." I said, "Because you've already fulfilled everything that I wanted and or needed. Let's just hang out and shoot the shit a little bit. How you doing? I'm Jack." He said, "I'm Jack." I said, "Nice to meet you, Jack. Awesome. I'm David." And it's a reality. I set that intention in place. And 2 days ago, Jack and I just recorded an interview in the expert piece that he uses in his social media, and I'll use in mine, to share with my investors some of my background so they get to know me a little bit more. So if you'd have told me when I was sitting in a firehouse watching flipping shows that one day I'd be on a flipping show, I would have said, "I think I could do that." Everyone around me would have said I was a lunatic. If you'd have told me the day I read The Secret and I watched the movie and I listened to Jack Canfield, if you'd have told me that one day I'd be sitting on his couch, hanging out with him and able to interact with him, give as well as receive, I would have said, "I like the idea, but I don't know how we're going to get there." So that was it, man. That was belief, right? Mindset, if you believe, brother, you can achieve. Those are true secrets for guys like us. You know, you share that to the average masses and they think we're freaking crazy. But yeah, I thought you'd get a kick out of that. Straight up,
awesome,
I walked in his
brother.
Door. He goes, "What can I do for you?" I go, "Nothing, bro. Yeah. You got it."
And he's used to probably getting people. "All right. Okay. What do you want? I mean."
Yeah, yeah.
And that is so cool.
He says to me, he says, "You just invested $20,000 for a one-day's coaching." He said, "Let me at least coach you." I go, "You've been coaching me for the past 6 years, man. I got my money's worth. It's all good." I said, "I just got to finish the loop. All right? It's an open loop. You got to finish the loop."
That is
so
awesome.
I'm with you, man. You're my people for sure.
Couple more questions. We'll wrap up. One,
yes.
I got to ask you, what motivates you, brother? What makes you get out of bed in the morning? I have an idea.
Yeah, it's a couple of different things. I am truly empowered to share. I am. You know, do you or I have to do these podcasts? No. You know, am I in a transition period where anybody who listens to this who's inspired by the words that we say, investigate us more, can potentially be in a business relationship with us in the future? Yeah, that's my, you know, that's my ulterior motive underneath it all. But at the end of the day, here's what drives me. I do honestly want that everybody that I interact with every single day, when I leave that interaction and that relationship, my goal is that they are in a better position than when I met them. And if I can do that every day, God is good, man. It comes around. It just fucking comes back again. And you're like, why am I getting these bestowed, these good gifts, whatever they may be? It's because I planted seeds with every human being that I met. Or at least I try to. I ain't perfect. Some people just piss me off. But you know what I mean? But that motivates me. And then as a direct result of that, I can bring that same energy home. So I don't have to, you know, I'm not good at it, I'll be honest with you, but I try. You know, I don't have to be that typical disconnected, busy parent and husband that can't participate in his own life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that definitely motivates me. Leave people in a better position than they were in before I met them. I think that's good.
Isn't it amazing? And you know this, brother. Isn't it amazing how much you give to people you get back two times? I mean, that's another thing that people don't. Yes. Yeah. And infinity. That's what people don't understand. The more you give, genuinely give, not wanting something in return, but putting it out there through your heart, giving back for free, you will get tons back, people.
Yeah. Yeah, for real.
Law of attraction.
His one sentence that was so hard for me to get into my daily routine. And today it just rolls off of my tongue. Hi, my name's David. Nice to meet you. How can I help you?
Exactly.
That's it. Practice that shit in the mirror. It feels really uncomfortable in the beginning because we're used to saying, what can you do for me, right? That's what we're ingrained to do. So if I can go contrarian, hi, I'm Dave. Nice to meet you. How can I help you? So what are your pinch points today? Hey, man, where are you getting bottlenecks in your business? What if I could answer one question and help you with one specific thing in your business, what would that be? What would that be? And people are like, what the fuck? What? Well, if you could help me with this, that would be great. Well, I can't, but I know a guy who can. He's been really good in my business. Let me introduce you to him. What? Do I have to pay anyone for that? No. My experience is yours because you and I met, right? What can I do for you? If you can work that into your daily life and into your relationships, I promise you, everybody who's listening to this recording of us, man, practice it. Do it to five people in your life every day. It's called the rule of fives.
Yes.
And if you can do that, I promise you things will begin to happen. Yeah, it will change. It will change for sure. So that motivates me, bro.
Brother Dave Seymour, how can people find out to you, you, man? How can they reach out to you, brother? If they want to hear more, this is amazing. Yeah, we could talk to you all day.
I'm so loud, bro. Just open up your window. You'll hear me. look, just you could obviously, there's this website called Google. Google GTS, Google that shit. Google my name, you'll find me there. But you can also get me directly at our company site, which is freedomventure.com. Freedom Venture. It's the front door to our investing site and what we got going on in business now. Actually, if you're interested in real estate, listening to this, guys, and you like the idea of learning some of the fundamentals of commercial real estate investing, which is where it's at today. It's all about cash flow. At the bottom of that page, there's a link to a free download to a book that I co-authored with my property manager, one of my advisory board members. It's called Unlocking the Code to Multifamily Investing. So that's a free gift from me to you.
That's
no
awesome.
Strings attached. All right.
David Seymour, thank you so much, brother. Again, thank you for your service as a firefighter and paramedic and what you're giving back to the world right now. It's golden, man. And much success to you in the future, brother. And anything I can do, me, little Pat Fitzgibbons, I can do for Dave Seymour, please let me know, brother.
Pat, you already did, man. You already did. But let's keep the communication open, man.
Yeah,
see what's next. This is the start, not the finish.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I love it. And everything will be linked up in the show notes for the listener. Dave Seymour, have a great one, my friend.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.